Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, I'm Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's podcast. Today we're going to be exploring with Andrew Lockhart-Mirrams from Lockhart Solicitors some of the factors that need to be considered when preparing a dental practice for sale and how to ensure that you take the right steps as you move towards that sale. So welcome, Andrew. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I wonder if you wouldn't mind just giving us a little bit of information about yourself and your background.
I've spent the last 30 years of my professional career working in healthcare, almost entirely for doctors and dentists and other healthcare professionals, and all the members of my firm do the same. We don't do general solicitor type work, and it's been great fun because we've been able to follow trends in healthcare right across the 30-year period. And I think it's useful to have that background when you're trying to advise people.
Absolutely. So with this sort of specific advice that you end up getting involved in when practices are coming up for sale or owners are considering taking that step, what are the first things that you think need to be considered to prepare a practice for sale?
I think the first thing, Nigel, is timing. Now, I accept that there will always be occasions where a practice owner has to sell quickly because there's illness in his family or that sort of thing. And if that's the case, you have to make the best you can of being prepared. But in most cases, and if you take, say, a 50-year-old dentist, they probably have a plan that 5 years down the line, they're going to sell. And at the moment, with what is still quite a buoyant market, people are taking advantage of it. But the key thing is, it's the 5 year down the line bit. And ideally, I would like to start working with dentists who know they're selling 5 years away in order to get things prepared properly. Because if you leave it till the last moment, you are losing out on quite a number of tricks that can help a good sale.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I end up with a number of calls from practice owners who I think have got to their end of the tether with a variety of things, whether it's the regulatory pressures they're feeling or some of the competitive pressures they're feeling in trying to run the practice effectively. And it's all a little bit too late at that point. Mm. So is 5 years typically the time scale that you think they should be working to?
I think 5 years is a very good time scale. And if I can give you possibly the best example of being prepared, if you come to a sale, when the purchaser is looking at it, he or his advisors will look at the last 3 years' business accounts. And if you rush that, you've just got the accounts as they are. If you can go to a specialist dental accountant, say 4 or 5 years before, the accounts can be restructured so that they present in the best possible way, and then the last 3 years accounts give the best possible picture. So you need a bit of time, but if you can do that, you're selling something which is polished up. We're not changing any of the accounts, but we can present the figures in exactly the same way. So that gives you a bit of time. And another example of that sort of thing is your own presentation, your own website, your own social media. If you've groomed that and it's nicely prepared and looks good, when you do go to the sales agent, everything is up and ready, it's shining and looking beautiful. You can't do that at the last minute. You can't suddenly rush off and say, my website's in a mess, let's go and get some designers to improve it. You don't have time. So it's all a question of getting ready and seeing that everything is shiny. But the accounting position probably is the key thing that needs time, because you could have three nicely prepared sets of accounts.
So what I've understood from that is just how important the accounting information is for a successful sale, where you can maximise the value. What other key bits of information do you think need to be prepared in the run-up to the sale?
I don't think it's quite so much a five-year timetable, but over 2 or 3 years, it would be enormously helpful for practice owners to make sure that their own record-keeping is in order. Time and time again, we ask people if they will produce the last receipts for simple things like electricity, gas, council tax, and they don't have them. They've been shoved away in a folder in the garage, or they've been sent to the accountants and no one has copies or anything of that sort. And practice owners need to realise that the buyer is going to be asking questions about everything that's involved in running the business. They don't want to buy a business that they can't see. And over a period of time, owners should be keeping their records nicely so that they can produce the last six council tax receipts or whatever it is, because we're going to be have to produce those to the other side.
And in respect of, I mean, you mentioned the fact that there's quite a buoyant market out there, and I think that's particularly the case when it comes to NHS goodwill values. So in respect of an NHS contract, what sort of things do practice owners need to think about as they come to sell their practice?
Well, the key issue to start off with is understanding what type of contract you've got, whether it's a GDS contract or a PDS contract, and getting advice about what will be involved in transferring that contract to the buyer. If, for example, you have a GDS contract, you can transfer it on to the buyer within the regulations. As a matter of right, you're entitled to do that transfer, provided you serve the right notices at the right time on the regional team. And what is often talked about is the partnership in and out route, where the seller remains in the practice, the buyer comes in as a partner, and a month or so later, the seller then retires. Now, with GDS, that's simple and straightforward. With PDS, personal dental services, it is not technically that straightforward, because any change with a PDS agreement brings about a novation, brings about the creation of a new contract. And if you shut the old contract down, in theory, the regional team, NHSE, has to agree to the start of a new contract. And that can create difficulties. And one of the problems that we have at the moment is that the way that's being addressed varies across the country. And in Oxford, for example, they may say, yes, we don't mind at all, you can basically transfer your PDS agreement. In London, they may say, if you're going to do that, we want to look at the value of the contract, we want to look at KPIs, we want to look at changes to monitoring and all that sort of thing before we will give consent. So across the country, it's very difficult to advise what will happen with PDS, whereas with GDS, we know that they can be transferred. And if we don't have an understanding of that at the outset, we can't plan.
Another factor that's come to the fore in recent years has been the involvement of the CQC. And I know when they first came on the scene, I think people were slightly confused as to the process they needed to go through to maintain the registration of the practice. What's been the CQC impact on both the preparation for and the completion of a sale?
If you're looking at it as an impact, I think the big problem is where people aren't prepared and do not understand the steps they have to go through. It gets left to the last minute, which again comes back to my point about preparation. And at the last minute, if someone suddenly says, oh, we need to register something, or goodness me, we don't have our right DBS checks in place, it just stops the whole system dead in its tracks, because if the purchaser is not properly registered, he or she cannot by law carry out a regulated activity. So again, it's a question of preparation. If you have someone who doesn't have their DBS checks, you've got to work on the basis that it's going to take 8 to 10 weeks to get that process through. Now, I know it's not 5 years that we were talking about at the start, but the people involved need to engage with their advisors or CQC specialists to make sure that they are ready and all the ducks are in a row when it comes up to the time, for example, that you want to use an in and out partnership arrangement. Because you move from being a single provider to a partnership. In theory, the partnership has to be registered with CQC, and then one of the partners retires and you carry on with a different single provider. And you've got to make sure that all the registration pegs are ticked.
So that sounds like one of the things that someone preparing the practice of sale and attracting potential suitors needs to do is check that those suitors are actually on the ball when it comes to these things. And that, in a way, might be a way of shortlisting the people that are serious about it, I guess. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I think that you're right about the need for people to understand the steps, and there seems to be an awful lot of ignorance about exactly what is required. And again, your point about preparation makes perfect sense. What other factors do you think need to be considered to help a sale go smoothly?
I think it's getting the advisors together at the outset to ensure that both sides of the transaction know what they're trying to do. And it's something which we've started promoting very, very heavily in the last month or so, with the idea that almost as soon as the sale has been agreed, the lawyers on both sides, the lender and the agent, and possibly even the clients, all get together on a conference call, identify what the deal is, work through the various permutations as to whether it's an asset purchase or a share purchase, work through the CQC issues, work through all the document issues, and try and understand what the problems are at the start of the legal transaction. And one of the key things that follows that, which we are finding very, very useful, is to ensure that at that conference, which takes the form of a conference call, so everybody's involved, we try and identify a number of milestone dates so that we all agree that within 8 weeks or by the 1st of December or whatever it is, a certain step will have been taken. And that has an enormous number of advantages, because it keeps you up to speed. And if you fall behind a milestone, everybody knows that there is a slip, and we can identify why there is a slip and who is responsible. And one of the sort of things that that gives is a much better idea of timescale. You might say, how long should an average transaction take? And understanding that is relevant to the needs to have milestones. Now, it's probably unlikely that a transaction is going to take less than 3 months. It's known, but that's pretty quick. 4 to 5 months is probably about okay. But the thing that happens is that around 6 months, transactional fatigue sets in. And at that point, the agent is sitting there not having his or her fee. That doesn't really matter quite so much. But the buyer is sitting there and no one's paid him any money. And not only that, as far as the buyer is concerned, he's discovered that his mate down the road has just sold his practice for a better figure. So the buyer is thinking, what am I doing selling to A when I could get a better deal? And the purchaser, who was all excited about buying the practice, is fatigued as well because he can't get at his new business and start doing his work. And we're seeing definitely that a six-month point is absolutely crucial when fatigue sets in. Then we're told, and we're seeing, that some transactions go on for 9 or 10 months. Well, at that stage, you're not just fatigued, you're completely exhausted. And one of the reasons, when I was talking about trying to have a conference discussion to get this working, is that if you can identify the milestones, you can see the possibility that fatigue is coming and try and do something about it. And the worst thing of all are these transactions that drift and drift and drift and drift. And everybody is dissatisfied, everybody is blamed, even if there is no fault at all. So we think that helping the sale go smoothly can be dealt with very much by getting people together at the start, agreeing the timetable and working to it.
Yes, I think it's interesting. A lot of people talk about an exit strategy. It's become a very fashionable term. But I don't know that many people have really understood what I-dotting and T-crossing is involved in creating a proper exit strategy. And it's almost, it sounds, listening to you, as if they need to treat it like a major project with proper structure, proper milestones, making sure they've identified who the stakeholders are. If they want, A, to maximise the value. I was very cognizant of your point about the need to get things like social media and marketing up to scratch and the appearance of the practice. But then also to have the transaction go smoothly, you need to have lots of steps in place.
Yes. Could I mention one other point that needs to be ironed out? A lot of people now see practices where there's been an incorporation of the private part of the practice as actually being a failed incorporation, because the incorporation may produce tax advantages to the owner of the company, but you only incorporate the private part of the business, and very often you're forced to leave the NHS contract behind. And if you do that, you're then forced to have a subcontract or some other sort of service arrangement, so that the company which wants to be receiving the money is paid for the subcontract work. So the value of the NHS contract remains with the individual, but the company is where you want the goodwill. Now, some of these have been created and they don't work very well. That's again another very good reason to get specialist advice early on, so that you can unwind some of those problems and not suddenly find at the end of the day what you're trying to do has got all the sort of bits sticking out of the road and it doesn't work.
Now, I think that's a really interesting point, because I suspect that when people look at the options for incorporation, they aren't thinking in terms of when they come to sell their practice. And actually some of those complexities they could anticipate. They may still go ahead with the incorporation, as you say, but with a plan in mind to unwind it. Mm. But it needs some thought before they even start incorporation, let alone when they get to the start of the process to sell their practice. But thank you very much indeed, Andrew. I think that's been extremely useful. It's quite an increasingly technical area, I think, now, selling a practice. The days of handshakes in pubs have long gone. And
unfortunately.
Yes. And I think there's a lot to consider. So we very much appreciate your time today and your advice and guidance.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.